Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic. Our a couple of housekeepings as a courtesy to us all. Please stay on mute unless you're called on to share. You can raise your hand to be recognized by the meeting chair, although this is a speaker meeting, so do that if you want for your own entertainment. In the participants window, you can change how your name is presented. If you want to take your last name out, you can. You can also stop and start your video. This will toggle your camera on and off. We encourage you to be aware of how you're presenting yourself online. These Zoom meetings are essentially open to the public. We at Simple Actions will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. Let's see, if you have your chat window up, you will see a link to the Tidewater Intergroup. When the time comes to pass the Seven Tradition Basket, we will ask that you place your contributions there. So for those who care to join, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in your first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. You can throw something out in the chat or raise your hand. And you could do that while I read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And I see nothing in the chat and I see no hands raised. So if you are in your first 30 days and you're a little bit shy, please don't leave here tonight without reaching out to somebody. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one, part one. And why don't you wave at the camera and welcome our panel this evening. We have Connie and David O. Hey, welcome. So I'm going to read the first paragraph in the doctor's opinion on page Roman numeral 26 or XXVI. And I believe David is going to share first. So I'll read this and then unmute David. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. David?
David, alcoholic.
Hi,
hey, everybody. It's great to be here on this meeting. Thanks to everyone who's doing service this evening, David, and anybody else from Simple Actions, wonderful to be here. Thank you for the reading. I know that alcohol was the solution to all the problems in my life. I repeated this insane behavior over and over again. I really, when I was drinking, I had no idea that I had an allergy. All right, wait a second. The mind, my thinking, causing me to drink, believing my own lies, the allergy was what got triggered every time I would pick it up and causing me to get drunk. And the next day, my emotions, the guilt and remorse coming off that bender told me that the only way to really cure that was through picking up that first drink and I'd be off to the races again. It took coming to the program and taking an honest look at my drinking to see that things always got worse, never better from drinking, that my mind destroyed my body and my body was getting flack or getting destroyed in the process from a physically as well as emotionally. And things like not eating well, not no personal hygiene. And so I'm just grateful to be here, grateful for the reading. And thank you. That's it for me for now.
Hi, my name is Connie. I'm an alcoholic. It's great to be here. Thank you, everyone, for your service. Thank you all for being here and for staying home. You know, with the first step overall, you know, I had no problem with being powerless over alcohol. I had no problem with that concept, but that my life had become unmanageable was really hard for me to understand. I couldn't see it, even though I had been alone and isolated. I had spent to try and get relief to fill that big hole. I had depression. So that notion that I must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind, That was definitely a hard one for me to understand. You know, when Silkworth talks about the allergy, that I can relate to. That I could relate to pretty much from the beginning. You know, not as a statement of blame, just as, you know, from background, I came from a family where drinking was very much allowed. My father was a fall down drunk and, you know, my mother sort of had that can't beat it, why not join it sort of attitude. And alcohol was very much allowed in our home. But the first time that I picked up alcohol at 12, which I wouldn't say it was allowed in my home at 12, but the first time I picked it up, I drank to excess. I blacked out. I passed out or threw up. I passed out. I woke up the next day with a terrible hangover and I couldn't wait to do it again. And that defined my drinking pretty much every weekend there out from the time I was 12 until the time I stopped drinking. And so if that isn't an allergy, that notion that that when I put it into my body, something happens to me, I don't know what does. You know, if I if I'm around cats, right, my eyes go crazy and I recognize that I have an allergy. But it took me a long time to really believe that the problem was alcohol. And when I went to my first meeting and I sat down, that debate of am I, aren't I an alcoholic, it went away right away. And so if I live in that notion that I have an allergy to alcohol, I'm able to figure out a way to live in the solution. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to continue in the doctor's opinion. The next paragraph for tonight, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. David?
Yeah, thank you, guys. Great. I don't think I saw the progression of my drinking until the very end. You know, I got in trouble right from the first drink, and I certainly got drunk right from the beginning. I wasn't a social drinker. And the drinking was progressive, and I was never, I don't know what the temperate social drinker is like, but I know for me that when I drank, I drank to get drunk. And I just, it was very progressive in me. I'm a little nervous. Take a breath. Take a pause. You know, people in my life who cared about me saw the problem long before I did. And I was in denial. That's a part of my illness. And it took for things to get really bad on the outside for me to begin to look at, I've got something, something's going on here. The problem was, by the time I had gotten to that place, I had burned all the bridges in my life, high school, opportunities, family, living on the street, trouble with the law. Parents had tossed me out of the house. And, you know, that was a good place for me. It was good for me to see that my drinking was out of control and that I needed help. And I too, I identify with my life being unmanageable, but I really didn't see the alcohol, the allergy piece really truly until I came into recovery and heard in the rooms that had a threefold illness. I definitely identify with problems, like I talked about earlier, for me, just the very basic things I couldn't follow through on, like holding a job, you know, telling the truth, following through on what I said I was going to be doing. And toward the end, thank God, I things were really bad. And that's when I hit the bottom. And I said, you know, I need help. And that's about all I have for right now. Thank you.
Okay. Connie.
You know, I'll just say that I'm the youngest of seven kids. And I won't say who he is, but one of my brothers is on this meeting. I have several, I'm blessed to have several members of my family in Alcoholics Anonymous, and reminds me of how to be grounded in the first step. So I just keep looking at him. And it's, you know, I've got him and my husband and another good friend on. So it's, and plus all of you, my new friends. So I get distracted. So that phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. You know, I can remember when I stopped drinking, you know, I'll just say that when I was in my drinking, I never saw the problems that I had. And, you know, yes, I could identify with feeling lonely. Am I unmuted? Okay. Sorry. It says unmute yourself. A big sign came up. So
we can hear you just fine.
Okay. Thank you. When I was drinking, I couldn't see the problems that I had. And it wasn't until I, towards the end when I came in, that the alcohol had stopped working, that I began to see the problems that I had. But this idea of craving, you know, right towards the end, the alcohol had stopped working. And I remember I was at a very good friend's brother's wedding back where I grew up in Michigan. And I had like, I don't know, let's say 8 vodka tonics. And at the time I was living in New York, so I didn't have to drink and drive. But here I was in suburban Michigan and I needed to drink, I needed to drive. So I had like 8 vodka tonics, and one of my best buds at the time turned to me and said, you know, don't you think you've had enough? And I just remember thinking, oh no, not you too, right? Like I saw him a couple times a year. And I just remember, you know, saying F you, like being so mad at him that he would call me out. And because we used to be great drinking buddies together, right? But he was able to stop, I wasn't, or he was able to be temperate, I wasn't. And I just remember thinking, uh-oh. And that, I mean, I'm sure I couldn't, if I'd had a field sobriety test, I wouldn't have passed, but I wasn't drunk. The click had stopped. I wasn't able to have that turnover of what I was looking for, that ah moment that settled things down for me. And so that to me, I can remember really clearly thinking about that. And I can remember thinking as we then went out from the wedding to a bar that was still open, you know, and drinking some more, that it wasn't safe for me to be drinking. Like I had that moment of clarity, but I wasn't willing quite yet to do anything about it. I just kept drinking. I just kept having more vodka. And again, I was getting, you know, filled up with the alcohol and trying to fill that hole, but I wasn't drunk. And so I was, you know, angry, discontent, pissed off. It wasn't working anymore. And yet I needed it, right? I had the habit and I needed it so badly in order to feel as though I could get through the day. At this point, I was working in advertising, and the more I drank, the more my job took off. That doesn't mean I had a happy life. It just meant for some reason, like it was just an upside, you know, just for whatever reason, it's what I needed to be doing to have success in that particular company. But I was really reliant on it. And I had this long list of nevers that I thought I would never do from watching, you know, other people that I loved. And sure enough, I drank during the day. Sure enough, I drove drunk. All the things that I held up as a sign, as someone having a problem with alcohol would do that I would never do. And sure enough, I had done them all. And so, you know, I wasn't able to see in the moment all of those things. I wasn't able to see it while I was drinking. And some of these things took many years into sobriety to see. I had low self-esteem. I thought, you know, here I had this great job, and yet, you know, I thought I was kind of, you know, rubbish. You would tell me something and I'd say, don't you know who I am? Right. Like, and I am and was nobody, right? I'm just another bozo on the bus. And so, you know, all of those things, that habit around drinking just became so embedded for me as a way of life and what I needed to keep doing. And again, I was just masking lots of different things, and nothing that was rock bottom for me, but I was just masking lots of different things that were problems for me. That's it.
Thank you, Connie. For those of you just tuning in, we're discussing step one tonight, which I neglected to read at the beginning of the meeting. Step one says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We're going to continue on Roman numeral 28. Here we go. It's a big one. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. David?
Yeah, thanks, David Alcoholic. You know, some of this I identify with, and other parts I don't. I drank a lot by myself. The people that I drank with were certainly as bad as I was, or certainly worse. And like I said before, I could see that my life was unmanageable, but alcohol was the solution for everything for me. It was the solution to all the pain and misery that I was feeling in my life on a daily basis. But I could identify with feeling like the life I was living was a normal one, as absurd as that was, scary even to people that saw me from the outside, like living on the streets and just terrible things. I don't even want to go into them all, but I do know that for me, alcohol felt like the solution. I can identify with that feeling of restless, irritable, and discontent, both in my drinking and also in recovery. I felt that way. And so when I was drinking, it was all about the mental obsession, thinking if I could only get a drink in me, how am I going to get it? It's going to give me some sense of well-being. And sure enough, as soon as I put booze in me, I was a big drinker, and I drank to get drunk, and I appreciate this idea of that feeling remorseful. I didn't feel a lot of remorse. I felt guilty for sure. Maybe that is remorse. And I don't think of myself as going on sprees. I was a daily drinker. And when they talk at the end about a psychic change, I think that was so important for me. That was some of the hope that I got when I came to AA, that my life could be different, that I could feel different, that I didn't have to have a drink to cope with life. And that psychic change that they talk about comes as a result of going through and doing the work for me. It's, you know, more the educational variety that I experienced. But I, you know, I'm fortunate that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I surrendered. I did go out and drink once after detox. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was thinking it would be different, but it wasn't. And I came back the next day and I was accepted into the detox, as weird as that might sound. And it was there that men and women like us came in and shared with me about this threefold illness. And that they told me that if I wanted a life that was second to none, I just had to put the plug in the jug and keep it simple and, do the next right thing. And, you know, I went from there to meetings out on my own, and from there, you know, found a sponsor. And it was through that process of getting a sponsor and working with him through the first 164 pages that my life began to change. And I began to feel like things are going to be better for me. And, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really appreciate the fact that I don't have to do it alone. And I'm reminded by people sometimes, blessed be, that they relapse and realize that that could be me too. So I need to just stay focused on recovery and stay away from that first drink. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Connie?
Yeah, so this whole piece I like really relate to. You know, I absolutely liked the effect produced by alcohol when I was first drinking. I felt as though I was this awkward girl who, again, I started at 12, so I was a girl for sure. I was this awkward kid who wasn't really sure how to make friends, just had this social anxiety. I didn't know it right at the time, but I definitely used alcohol to help me with that. And I can remember instances, again, as I said, I was a blackout drinker. I can remember instances where I woke up in the middle of some sort of thing going on. So one time I remember it was New Year's Eve, and I was with a boyfriend and some of his friends. And we were in a bar, and I came out of my blackout, and he just like looked at me like, how could you talk to me that way? And I said, what are you talking about? And I guess I had just like ripped into him and was swearing at him, and I had no recollection of it. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I did no such thing, like just so sure that I had, not done it. So, you know, this notion of, the true from the false, right? My behavior was such that my sense of reality was just whatever it was I remembered it to be at that moment. I drank alone a lot. I mean, I had some pals, but for the most, and I did go to these big media parties where the whole thing was about free alcohol, in hopes that you would, you know, buy big media plans with them. And but otherwise, I pretty much drank alone at home. I liked the solitude of it, and I also realized that I didn't get into jackpots when I drank at home alone. You know, I didn't have to worry about who I went home with, who I insulted, you know, what I said, how I behaved if I was home drinking alone. I talked a little bit about that period of time. You know, I started drinking when I was 12, and I came in when I was 24. And so that period of time from about 23 to 24, where the alcohol had stopped working for me, and that notion of just feeling like, you know, the whole world was against me. It was like I had these two personas. There was this one at work, and I could drink, for whatever reason, I could drink at work
and do what I needed to do. And then there was this persona, this isolator, this person who was home alone and who was drinking. And I couldn't cope. I couldn't figure out how to be out in the world really, and spend a lot of time alone. And drinking alone didn't really seem to help in the same way that drinking amongst people, I had that sense of like ease. And I don't know, I guess I constantly think about that word dis-ease, you know, disease and dis-ease if you break it apart. And I constantly think about that feeling that I had, which was just never feeling right with the world, I guess is really what it was. And then you can imagine, then the alcohol stops working for me and I'm like, what? Like, constant disease all the time. And I had this sense of I had to drink more and that wasn't working. And then I started spending money that I didn't have and that wasn't working. And, you know, I would just start this cycle over and over and over again, hoping for a different result, right? We know what that is, the insanity of it. But I have to say, I'm not sure I really ever thought I wasn't going to drink again. I mean, I really never had that sense until the very, very end when I had this moment of clarity when I was driving home. I was in Michigan at that wedding that I was talking about, and I was driving home the route I always drove. And as a teenager, I drove drunk. And I was driving home and I pulled over and I said, what are you doing? Like, I had that moment of clarity that I was really headed into a bad place and that I was really going to need to stop drinking. I wasn't going to stop drinking forever, but I just had this sense that I had to do something. Where that came from, I have no idea, because really after all of those binges that I had, all of those blackouts, throwing up, waking up with a terrible hangover, I mean, the worst hangovers ever. Like, I get migraines now occasionally and they're sort of along that same line. My hangovers were sort of along that same line. And yet it wasn't until that absolute moment that I really ever had that sense that maybe I was going to stop drinking, that was a possibility, that, hey, instead of it being about everybody else's problem, that maybe I was part of the problem. And so that was the beginning, right? That beginning of admitting that I was powerless over alcohol. Again, I hadn't quite gotten to that part about my life being unmanageable, but I recognized that step one was the start, and I had been in Al-Anon, I should just say. So I was very familiar with the steps. There were steps I was not going to do in Al-Anon, you know, like 4 and 5, the really hard work stuff, right? 4 and 5, 7 and 8, 6 through 9, right? I wasn't going to do any of those, but I just had this moment of grace, and I just had a moment of knowing that I was not going to have another, that I needed to not have another drink. And that if I did what these steps laid out, that I had a chance, although I still wasn't willing to go to a meeting. But I definitely had a sense that the gig was up, step one was the start, and that if I focused on just that, I had a chance. And, you know, they used to say when I was getting sober in New York, they used to say, I wish you a long, slow recovery. And I used to get so mad at that, because I guess I'm kind of precocious and I wanted what I wanted. And I wanted it now. And that idea of it taking a long time to recover was not something that I knew. Like, that's not something that I wanted. I wanted it to be, you know, fast, which, as we well know, is not the way it goes. Thanks.
Thanks, Connie. We're going to continue in the doctor's opinion. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. David?
Yeah, I'm doing the reading, and I'm wondering, you know, the people, those who do not understand, you know, maybe who are they talking about? Are they talking about the people working in the field, Dr. Silkworth, and the other people in the field? I'm not too sure, but I know that, you know, the simple rules that I learned, was taught are the, I think of them as simple actions, you know, that I can take every day. You know, I learned in the beginning, once I went from that detox into recovery, I was in a recovery house, went out to meetings, somebody said, I'm going to be a sponsor. That was a good thing for me, you know, joining the group, you know, doing service, starting my day with prayer, ending with prayer, being with Fred, my sponsor, and every week. And that was so important. I had so many questions about living without the drink. And I didn't really see a lot of the change that was occurring in me. I think other people can see the change more easily. Although one of the things that I did notice right off the bat, because I had this obsession to drink, it seemed to be with me a lot in the beginning. And Fred would tell me, just ask for that obsession to be removed as part of the work. And I would do that every day or every time I felt that obsession coming on. And slowly by surely, I don't know when it happened, maybe a month or so passed, and I realized I didn't have that obsession anymore. And that was such a blessing for me, just to have that that cross that I was carrying for so long off my back. And I found that to be true with other things as well, that once I committed and had the willingness to take suggestions and work on things, that my life got better. And I'm so grateful for that. There were things that like I talked about earlier, with the unmanageability of my life, I didn't have any way, I didn't take care of myself. You know, hadn't seen a doctor or a dentist in probably 3 or 4 years. And you can imagine what that would be like. You know, had lived without taking a regular shower on a regular basis. You know, and there was all that disappointment that I felt in early recovery that got kind of washed away as I became willing to work through the steps with him. Let's see, what else could I say about that? The obsession was gone, and those problems that felt so difficult became easier. You know, making a doctor's appointment, showing up for the holidays with my family, and not, you know, quitting at the last moment out of fear. You know, showing up and doing an honest day's work, despite sometimes the committee and the conversations that I would have. I found that if I could just, you know, come back and do the simple actions around asking God for help and, you know, practicing the principles in my affairs, I was able to get through these old behaviors in a new way. And that was wonderful. And so I'm really grateful that we have this program. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Connie?
So for me,
I didn't, as I mentioned earlier, that I could admit that I was powerless over alcohol, and I talked a little bit about how that came to be, but that my life had become unmanageable. I couldn't see that part for a long time. And so while putting the drink down, and I feel fortunate that I've been able to have continuous sobriety, I haven't had to experiment, although I have thought about it and romanticized it. As those things, as those problems started to sort of surface, like by putting the drink down, I felt really good. And you know, I started going to meetings and getting known. And someone said to me when they saw me open my hand a little bit, you know, they put their phone number in my hand and they said, you know, can you please call me tomorrow, right? And I didn't know what any of that was about, right? Because I was like coming in just as the meeting was opening, and I was leaving, you know, just as people were saying the Serenity Prayer, and it works if you work it, so work it, right? You know, like we did that whole thing in New York. And So I wasn't getting the fellowship or the benefit of talking to people. And so as the problem started to come to life, like the bills as one example, or that sense of what do you do yourself once you stop drinking, I was overwhelmed by that. And it wasn't until probably about 6 weeks that I got a sponsor. But I got very, very overwhelmed by it and thought, I had the sense of, well, I'm not drinking now, you know, and I thought I was sober. Why aren't these things clearing up? And of course, they don't clear up on their own. They clear up as we work through the steps and as we work through the problems themselves with another alcoholic. And again, I for the most part was really able till about 6 months. I was really, the cravings had subsided, and I really was lucky in the sense that I didn't have to deal with that particular piece because I was sort of dealing with that whole wreckage of what unmanageability meant for me. I can't really talk about like the psychic change without sort of referring to all of the steps for myself, right? I knew it was about just not picking up the first drink. I didn't necessarily have hope that things were going to get better because I was doing it alone and I didn't have anybody to help me see that. But I did start to see that people came back to the same meetings. People raised their hands. They counted days. I didn't do that. They started talking in a general way about what was going on in their life. I didn't do that, right? I left as soon as the meeting was over. I wasn't doing any service. And so all I was really focused on was just not picking up that first drink. And so I couldn't see all those few simple rules. But as I started to, you know, as the MOCUS became less and less, I started to see that people were coming back to the same meetings. People were talking to each other. People were coming a few minutes early. People were turning to their left and to their right and introducing themselves. I started to see this, terrified on how to start it, but I started to see that that was something that was going on. And so I guess I started to aspire to be one of those people, right? Like I said before, this idea of, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, wishing me a slow recovery, right? Like that other people could have that, I wanted it too. And so I started to copy them. And the easy part was for me first was turning to my left and turning to my right, because I still came in like a minute or two before the meeting started. So it was definitely a fear of you getting to know me, because if you really knew me, I don't know, dot, dot, dot. So I could focus on just the simple rule of just not picking up the first drink, of going to the same meetings. I thought I had to solve all my problems at once. And it wasn't for some time until I started to realize that I could put those things aside and figure out a plan once I was sure that I had this, you know, once I was more embedded into Alcoholics Anonymous and had sort of the fellowship around me. But again, that took a long time because I didn't get a sponsor for about 6 weeks and did it by myself. And I don't recommend that either. I really recommend trying to, in the same way that I would have thrown myself into drinking, I recommend throwing yourself into the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous in order to to see what's possible. You know, I think for me, some of it was shame that I grew up really believing you could pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And it could be, you know, you could get out of anything. And this was not a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of thing. This is a program of recovery. And so it is not once and done. And I remember people saying to me, well, you know, what do you mean you're not drinking for today? Like if you got engaged and got married, would you drink champagne at your wedding? I was like, well, of course I'd drink champagne at my wedding, but like that I was even entertaining that, right? Like I wasn't dating anyone. So, I mean, just that whole, all those games that I played with myself, much like in my prayer when I was drinking, which was, you know, dear God, if you do this, I'll do that. It just was nonsensical. And so for me, I really just focused on not picking up that first drink. Thanks.
Thanks, Connie. Our final paragraph of the evening is on Roman numeral page 30. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. David?
Thank you. You know, it's a self-diagnosed illness. I was told that early on that I'm the only one that can say I'm an alcoholic. And so self-diagnosis is really important. And one of the things that I was told early on in recovery and still today is that just do it one day at a time. We don't drink one day at a time or anything else. And, you know, I really appreciate the fact that we have this doctor's opinion in the book, which is a reminder to me that I have an illness, that it's an allergy, that if I don't pick up that first drink, that I can't get drunk. I can think about the drink, but I need to learn to think the drink through today. I need to continue to work on things in my recovery that are gonna keep me sober, like meetings and support and doing service like this tonight. I know these things are very important. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm different from the normal social drinker who might be able to drink without having the problems that I have. But yeah, I don't think I have any more to say on that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Connie?
Here's what I know, and it's not a lot, but what I know is that when I put down alcohol, I stopped getting drunk, I stopped throwing up, I stopped blacking out, and I stopped waking up with a terrible hangover. And that to me was the surest sign that I was in the right place when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and that debate that I talked about, am I or aren't I an alcoholic, stopped. And so when I couple that with that notion of the physicalness of the disease stopping because I haven't picked up a drink and drank alcohol, then I know that I'm on the path for something that works for me. I get overwhelmed sometimes with how grateful that I am that I found that path and that I've been blessed to have that kind of entire abstinence, that I was really ready, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what goes into it exactly, but when people notice that I don't drink, you know, at a function or whatever, and I just order club soda, and I usually sort of, you know, oh, I'm taking medicine, or I don't feel like it, or is this just what I want? I don't really think much of it, but sometimes they're paying more attention than I think they are. And the next day they want to talk about it, like if it's a work thing. And I am guarded with my anonymity. Like I believe for the sake of everyone else more than for me, that it is really important to guard my anonymity, that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I balance that with, you know, needing to extend my hand whenever someone is asking for help. And by the way, I've seen all the chat messages of people asking for help. So thank you for your phone numbers. And I've taken them, or if you have mine, you're welcome to call. But I know that I just don't drink for today, right? You know, a day at a time. And that allergy went away because with God's grace, I put alcohol down. And that's the other thing that I would say is that, you know, not only for me is it about the steps, but it's my relationship with a higher power that helps me to stay abstinent. And I can't do it alone. You know, I wear this dumb Fitbit. I've been having a heart issue, and it's not dumb. I don't mean that. It's just self-conscious because I don't think I like the way it looks, right? So, and at 10 minutes on the hour, it buzzes, right? And so at 10 minutes on the hour, if I can't get up and take a walk, I push away and I say, you know, I push away and I say a little prayer. And so, that to me is the gift, right? That's the awareness and the beauty of this program, is that I can choose to live my life this way. And that's what sets me apart. You know, that's all that makes me unique, is that I don't pick up a drink today. And that's the only thing that I can focus on as being unique. Otherwise I'd be in big trouble. Cause my ego, like I said before, when they first had me doing service and we were still smoking in meetings, and they said, you know, pick up the ashtrays. And I like looked at them like, don't you know who I am? And like just the arrogance, right? It was nothing. It was based on nothing other than my own fear of getting involved, right? Anybody getting to know who I was. So I don't know. I think that's really all I have to say, except that I'm eternally grateful, and I'm so glad you all are here as well.
Thank you both so much. We're going to have a few minutes left over. Feel free to raise your hand if you would like to share. I'm going to, while you're thinking about that, I'm going to put out into the chat, tidewaterinnergroup.org once again, the seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions while contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses. The seventh tradition is essential at every level of service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the other alcoholic who still suffers. And I was so delighted to hear, Connie, that people are reaching out through the chat for help. If you're in here and you need help, please let yourself be known. So I am going to ask if BJ would like to share.
Hi, I'm BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, BJ.
Thank you, Connie and Dave. Thank you so much for sharing tonight. David, I really loved what you shared about asking your higher power to remove the obsession. That's a big part of my recovery too. And for me, I need to, my recovery looks like I need to make a surrender. If I'm in enough pain, I'll surrender in some way, shape or form, even if it's reaching out to my higher power. But my favorite paragraph in the whole entire big book is the part of the doctor's opinion. I think we read it, that talks about men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol and the sensation. While they admit it is injurious, they cannot differentiate true from false. I can't tell you how many times I would get drunk at night. I got drunk in the morning too, but by the time night rolled around, I was blacked out, and, you know, I'd be driving home and I'd hop up on the median or on a curve or something, and it'd scare the crap out of me. And, you know, I'd get home and I'd wake up the next morning and just be like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Like this, I'm going to die, man. This is not good. And, you know, a few hours later, I'm getting off of work and thinking, you know, that really wasn't that bad. I can control it. Like I've controlled it before. And for me, that's that self deception. I couldn't differentiate the true from the false. The truth is, you know, 9 times out of 10 that I put this in my body, you know, and it was progressive. It wasn't always like this, but especially in the last years of my drinking, I am put in a dangerous situation or a situation that is not good, or I'm doing harm. It's just, my drinking is not a good thing. But I can convince myself that it's okay. Every single morning for the last several years of my drinking, I woke up and tried to stop, and it only got worse. The key there is I was trying to stop on my own. And then they're restless, irritable, and discontent until they can again experience that sense of ease and comfort from drinking. Yeah, man, like I everything gets under my skin. For me, it's the fear. I'm afraid of doorbells, the mailbox, the telephone. I'm afraid of everything until I put that alcohol in my body. And all of a sudden, I'm not afraid of anything. Like, it made me bulletproof for a long ass time, and then it didn't. All of a sudden, one day, I was just as afraid of people, places, and things when I was drinking as I was when I was sober. And that's, for me, I hear a lot of people say alcohol stopped working for me. That was my experience, where it just didn't take me to the place that it once did. And so I'm restless, irritable, and discontent at the end, whether I'm drinking or not, which was actually a gift, because that put me in a place of desperation, where I finally became willing to come to AA and ask somebody to take me through the 12 steps, which saved my life. And then drinks, which they see others taking with impunity. I go out to dinner with friends and I see them a couple drinks, and I'm like, but why can't that be me? And what I finally had to realize is the alcohol does not do for them what it does for me. A normal person has a few drinks, they start to feel a little out of control, a little tipsy, maybe a little sick, and they don't like that feeling, so they stop drinking. Not me. I start to drink and I start to feel energized. I start to feel capable. I start to feel attractive, and I need to. He was my drinking buddy in college. Like, we drank pretty much the same. We partied all the time, almost every night. And then once we graduated college, he stopped and I didn't. And that still blows my mind. The big book talks about being a real alcoholic. And I know at my core today, I am that real alcoholic. It's only ever going to get worse for me, never better. You know, I like the pickle analogy. Once you're a pickle, you can't go back to being a cucumber. But anyway, I love the doctor's opinion. I love talking about the allergy, and I definitely love talking about how we're different from other people. We all love being unique, and unfortunately we're very unique in this way, but for me, it's just fully conceding to my innermost self that I am a real alcoholic and that I can't safely drink ever again. But there is hope. For me, AA has saved my life, and it's a solution that works for a lot of people. So we're pretty lucky. That's all I have to share.
Thanks, BJ. Debbie D.
Hello to my people. Oh my gosh, I'm an alcoholic and my name is Debbie. My heart is going about 100 miles a minute. So I just know this program works. I get teary-eyed just seeing y'all's faces, and I know it's just one alcoholic talking to another, and I am learning so much about powerlessness. I am obviously powerless over touching my eyes, nose, and mouth on a regular basis, since they told me I can't do that. And so, oh my gosh, the doctor's opinion saved my life, because I was not a daily drinker. I was not what you hear a lot in the rooms, but what I was I drank to get drunk. I wanted to fall down, have skinned up knees, and tell you what a good time I had the next day. And I had figured out before I came to AA, when I heard people in AA say the first drink gets you drunk, I knew what that meant. I had already figured that out, that if I'm going to take one drink, it's on. And if I couldn't finish it, I was not going to take that one drink. And so that made me think, I got this under control, because I can take it or leave it. Except I found out that was not true. I couldn't take it or leave it usually past Thursday, or I would say I'll drink Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then it's Wednesday, or, you know, we do what we do and we drink. And I'm just so delusional. Before this meeting, I was talking to my husband about the fear and how it's just got a grip on me, because I finally realized I'm not a youngster. I'm at high risk. What the hell? What is that about? When did that happen? And so I am just so happy to be here. You know, when I first came to AA, it's been a minute, and they would say, until it, you know, I was too young, too smart, and too pretty anyway to be in this joint. And even though I drank in low bottom joints, but they would say wonderful things like, don't put booze in the hole in your face, Debbie, because they knew how smart I was. So I was like, that's great, but how do you do that? And then luckily, I got in with a woman and with a group of people that believed in these steps and that took me through these steps, dragging me through these steps, fighting me through these steps, but yet still, and I'm not a first nighter. They let me drink every drink I needed to stay in this seat comfortably. And I am just so grateful for those people. And I love you all. And I'm so grateful to see you. Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie. That brings us to the end of the sharing portion of our meeting. I'll say a couple of things. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out here in this room after the meeting or send a chat. Home group members, you want to wave at the thingy? Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be hanging out in the room after this meeting. So please feel free to make that known. Or if you're shy, I'm going to paste an email address into the chat window, info@simpleactions.net, and just send an email there. I have given everybody, let's see, is that all the housekeeping? Somebody raised their hand to read the last two paragraphs on 164. And while we're getting that queued up, what did I want to say? I was going to say something. Oh, I've given everybody the ability to unmute themselves, but not all at once. But please say thanks to Connie and David and everyone who shared tonight. Thank you both so much. Come on in and chime in at your discretion, anyone?
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Connie. Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you, Connie.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
I could relate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Do I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Jessica. This meeting is over. I'm just trying to figure out how to operate the computer part of it. So, yeah, absolutely. It's probably going to take me...
I just muted that cat. Jessica, would you like to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Anybody?
David, I can.
Thank you.
An alcoholic named Sharon.
Hi, Karen.
Sharon. Our work is meant to be suggestive only. We realize you know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Huh? This is a great act for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Sharon. I neglected to call for announcements. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? All right. You're welcome to hang out in the room after the meeting. And for those who would choose to, we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
Father,
art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.